crossed wires by Beautiful Cheat and Lady Knox. A Roswell, New Mexico story featuring Michael Guerin, Alex Maines. Recorded for the ITPE 2021 for Joe Carthage. Hope you enjoy. Summary. Michael's been kicked off more than one Starfleet posting. So when he learned he was reassigned to the USS Roswell, he decided that he would keep his head down and behave. This decision is immediately thwarted when he meets her hot Vulcan captain. This might be the first time Michael got kicked off a posting for flirting with a captain. Chapter 1. The Constitution-class starships were the Federation's frontline vessels, their flagships. They weren't warships, they were symbols of the Federation's power and grace, symbols of diplomacy. But diplomacy could pack a punch with 12 phaser bangs and 6 torpedo tubes mounted fore and aft. Michael had seen the ones mounted to the underside of the saucer as the USS Roswell waited, almost serenely, for Michael's shuttle to arrive. He'd been like the nerdiest first-year engineering student, staring at the Roswell from his window, taking in every single little detail, giddy with excitement. Of course, Michael had known the specs of the ship backwards and forwards, even before he had been reassigned, memorized them while languishing at Starbase 88, under the hateful eye of Captain Jesse Maines. But knowing specs and seeing the real thing were a world apart. Standing in the corridor of the starship, Michael felt like he could finally breathe again. His engineer's ear picked up every whoosh and whistle and hum of the machinery, and it all sounded good, in harmony. Even the chattering crew, as they walked calmly from one station to the next, sort of synced right in with the general ship noises. It felt healthy, in a way Starbase 88 had not, which, unlike Roswell, had specialized in war. The inside of the ship was just so colorful, clean white walls broken up by yellow doors or red wall comms. For some insane reason, the ceiling was orange, and Michael loved it. And it wasn't just the ship that was colorful. So were the crew members. Michael took a moment to appreciate Starfleet's new colorful line of uniforms, especially miniskirts. The miniskirts were definitely a plus. The other plus was his family. His siblings and his adoptive father, Lieutenant Commander Sanders, had been stationed on the Roswell for 1 year and 5 years now, respectively. And it's likely why he was too, now. See, the issue was that Starfleet sort of saw Michael as a problem child, which was patently untrue. Sure, he had a slight history of creative problem-solving, but Michael felt like that was a plus. Honestly, the Dynamics captain should have been happy that he added that experimental tech into the warp drive. That poor old girl was creaking at warp fucking 2 before he got his hands on her. And hey, maybe he did introduce a new spore-based scrubbing system to life support on the Adamant, violating an invasive species protocol or two. But it wasn't like that had done any real damage. And okay, so maybe there was a shade of insubordination. But insubordination was in the eye of the beholder, and when the beholder was Jesse fucking Maines, a little rebellion was a good thing in Michael's book. Speaking of which, he was a little nervous about the captain of the Roswell being Maines' son Alex. But he had decided to keep his head down, try to skate by unnoticed, if only for the sake of his family. Starfleet had put him here on purpose. An absolute last-ditch effort to get Michael to fly straight under the watchful eye of the family he missed terribly. Smart, manipulative bastards. though he supposed he preferred it to them shoving a professorship in his hands and sending him to the academy where he couldn't slip experimental tech into warp drives or life support. We would absolutely die of boredom. He wouldn't be bored here. One simply couldn't die of boredom on a cutting-edge Constitution-class starship, right? Especially not one whose 5-year mission was so deep in the unexplored parts of the quadrant that it made Michael's head spin just a little. And the mechanics on this thing were fascinating. "Lieutenant Garen?" an amused voice broke into his musing. Which was probably for the best, because Michael already had a tool in his hand and was contemplating popping open a control panel. Yeah, he said, taking her in. Humanoid, but the big black eyes gave her away. A betazoid. The knee-high boots and gold miniskirt just highlighting her muscle. But Michael also noted the solid gold stripes braided into the cuffs of her sleeves, so he kept his demeanor professional. He was going to keep his head down, damn it. This was a cool ship, and he was close to his family, and he wasn't going to screw it up. Commander DeLuca, right? When Isabel told him about her, she neglected to mention how unfairly attractive she was. Honestly, Isabel, a little warning, and a lot less mean girl, less grumbling with no bite. She smiled, nodding. The captain was wondering if he got lost. Oh, Lord, Mainz was going to be an asshole, wasn't he? I wasn't aware of a meeting with Captain Mainz. He frowned, confused. Just something he likes to do with the newbies. Quick meet and greet. Nothing to be nervous over. Do I look nervous? He asked, pocketing his tool. Lead the way. She gestured down the hall, towards the turbo lift. I've heard a lot about you, she started. And at his raised eyebrow, she shook her head. Mostly good from your family, Lieutenant Commander Sanders particularly. We're glad to have you aboard. As they stepped into the lift, Michael carefully kept the suspicion off his face, but he got the impression Commander DeLuca could sense it. He shored up his psychic defenses on instinct, on the likely chance she was using her abilities to get a read on her new crewman. Noticing, she shifted her attention back to her pad, and even though he felt kind of bad, he didn't make any attempts to explain. They arrived at Deck 9 in silence. The door opened with a soft swoosh, and Michael stepped out, running right into a Vulcan. And to his knowledge, there was only one on board, Roswell. His first coherent thought was that he was hot. Unfairly hot. He took a moment just to take Mainz in. That typically neutral Vulcan expression did nothing to change the fact that Mainz had delicate model-like features. His hair was a little long for standard regulations, but who was Michael to talk? And anyway, it looked silky and smooth. Michael's hand itched to sweep it out of his eyes, tuck a few strands behind those cute pointy ears. Mainz's command golds fit him like a damn glove, showing off an impressively chiseled chest, and from what Michael could see from this angle, an unfairly sweet ass clad in snug black pants. Did they not have uniforms that actually fit on this ship? No, Michael was going to find the horny admiral who approved this new line of uniform and personally sent him a thank you note. Mr. Garen, welcome aboard the Roswell, Mainz said, and his voice was, wow, okay. Michael, for the first time in his life, felt like his brain just got short-circuited. Crap. This might be the first time Michael got kicked off posting for flirting with the captain. Alex could honestly say that he hadn't been sure what to expect, given his father's reports on Lieutenant Garen. But this was not it. The first thing that stuck out was the cowboy hat, entirely incongruous with the rest of Garen's red engineering uniform. Definitely not dress code. But Alex never particularly cared about the odd dress code violation, as long as people were doing their jobs. And honestly, he kind of liked the individuality. It gave the ship color. Well, more color. The second was that Garen was gorgeous. That was to be expected, he supposed. He had never met an Antaran who wasn't. Not that he'd met that many, given their near extinction. But there was something particularly striking about him. Maybe it was the curls that Garen revealed whenever he pulled the head off to rake his fingers through his hair, something that seemed to be a nervous habit. Perhaps it was the light honey brown of his eyes. Maybe it had to do with the slight crookedness of his nose, a welcome imperfection. No matter, Alex's third impression was that his father, predictably, had undersold Garen's genius, which he had known already, considering the reports from the Edamant and the Dynamic and Lieutenant Commander Sandra's gruff, monosyllabic approval, which amounted to a glowing testimonial from essentially anyone else. However, it was thrown into stark relief during their brief conversation. Garen had talked his ear off about power nacelles, about the improvements to the lithium and dilithium reactor, and all the other parts of the ship that Alex's understanding was best encapsulated as enough. Though Alex had only intended to have a brief meeting with the lieutenant, suss out just how intractably insubordinate he really was, he'd found himself listening in bemusement as Garen somehow both gushed over and criticized his ship. It was obvious from the start that Garen had immediately fallen in love with Roswell. And how could he not? Alex was of the firm belief that his ship was by leaps and bounds the best in Starfleet. Any engineer worth their salt, and certainly one as intelligent and inquisitive as Garen, would immediately see what Alex saw in her. But Garen also saw room for improvement in even the most minor things, and Alex would have been perfectly happy to stand there and listen to him ramble, smile as bright as sunshine due to excitement about things he barely understood for hours. "Ah, Captain," Commander DeLuca broke in, her voice tinged subtly with amusement. He didn't look at her. He was not taking the bait. "We'll be late for our meeting with Dr. Valenti for the final briefing on the 8 mission to Cygni Alpha 10. "Right. Thank you, Number One," he said stiffly. "I'll just make my way to engineering, check in with Sanders," Michael said, taking the hint. "Deck 5, right?" He didn't wait for an answer, and there was no need to correct him. Garen had done his homework. "I honestly don't know if I should be vaguely offended, mildly frightened, or simply impressed," Alex admitted to Maria as they walked away, looking over at her. She typically helped provide some clarity in these sorts of situations. "I think you should be worried about how long the ship will stay structurally sound," Maria said dryly. Alex inclined his head. It was a fair point. "Where we are going, it's not the worst idea to have someone around to think innovatively." Maria hummed her agreement, but he could tell she was unsure, and honestly, Alex felt the same way. The creative thinking, after all, wasn't the real problem here. "Sanders has also promised me that, and I quote, 'He'll make sure the stupid kid doesn't blow up the damn ship and us in it.'"
"And when we're not in it?"
Maria asked archly.
"Guess we're shit out of luck," Alex said dryly.
Oriya was a deserted planet in the Epsilon Indi star system. There had once been a thriving civilization here, older than the Federation, possibly older even than Antar, which had been one of the first warp-capable civilizations in the Milky Way. Oh, how the mighty have fallen, Michael thought, and even after all this time, Michael wasn't sure how he felt about the end of the Antaran Empire. Maybe it had been deserved, but there was always a part of him that longed for home. And Oriya reminded him of Antar, the lush and green beauty of it. But taking in the beauty wasn't the reason for their mission. There was a facility built deep inside of a mountain, an enormous structure that was still in perfectly working order, according to preliminary reconnaissance. Starfleet, of course, had been eager to learn what it could possibly have been used for, possibly hoping for something they could use to gain the advantage in the Cold War against the Klingons.
Of course, the enormity of the structure meant that sooner or later the inevitable would happen. The captain ordered the team to split up, and Michael saw an opportunity too good to let go. "I think you should let Rogers and Todd take the rest of security, sir," Michael suggested as politely as he could manage. At Alex's raised eyebrow, Michael grinned and tugged on his shirt, which honestly should be blue, because hello, engineering was a science. But in this case, it was working for him. "I'm a red shirt too, remember? I'll watch your back, Captain." "You're an engineer, not security," Captain Mainz replied, plain and matter of fact, in the way Vulcans always were so known for. He nodded. "Fair. But neither of those two guys can move a couple thousand kilos with their brains, so..." The captain had to concede to Michael's point, which was how he found himself wandering a gorgeous ancient facility alone with Alex Mainz. "Is this place amazing or what?" Michael asked, taking readings as they walked, approaching a door at the end of a long hallway. "Quite," Mainz agreed. "I confess, I thought it might be." He hesitated, looking for a word, probably trying to be tactful. "Difficult, exploring a post-apocalyptic planet?" Michael filled in, and Mainz winced, just a bit. "It's fine. It happened when I was a kid. The things we experience as children often leave the deepest scars," he pointed out, the door opening with a silent rush of air as they approached it, leading into what looked to be a central engineering hub. "Score." Michael let out a breath. Mainz wasn't wrong. "Yeah, I guess I've made peace with it," Michael said, slowly shaking his head. "And anyway, I'd rather think about how beautiful this place is than..." The door closed behind them with a mechanical click. The lights flickered before going off, plunging the room into near darkness, illuminated only by the glow of yellow emergency lights. Mainz spit back a soft curse, looking back at the automatic door they'd just come through. "Lieutenant Garen?" Michael did a sweep of the room with his tricorder. "Not registering any primary system activity." That was weird. "So you're saying we're trapped?" Mainz was pulling out his communicator, flipping it open. "I'm saying..." Michael slipped the tricorder away, going to one of the consoles near the door. He had a pretty good guess about what it might be. "If I can get us out within the hour, you owe me dinner. And a drink," he said lightly, winking at him. Mainz arched an eyebrow, but he didn't say no. In fact, he looked intrigued, and Michael had to resist the ridiculous urge to punch the air. "You're very sure of yourself," Mainz said wryly, but he was replacing his communicator. Michael laughed, finding the fastenings for the console and popping it open, revealing a mess of mechanics that no one could have set eyes on for millennia. And he had to just take a moment to catch his breath, look at it, appreciate the beauty of it. "Hold my hat," he said in lieu of an answer, pulling it off and tossing it to him. Mainz caught it, awkwardly turning it over in his hands for a moment, before finding a low wall to sit on and setting it aside. Michael was rather acutely aware of the captain's eyes on him, intent, serious. He sneaked a few glances over at him, but Mainz really had perfected the Vulcan resting neutral phase, and he couldn't tell if the man was waiting for him to fuck up, checking out his ass, or trying not to fall asleep. Actually, no. Most of Mainz's attention seemed to be on Michael's hands, so he was probably just interested in what he was doing. Pushing aside the disappointment that he wasn't checking out his ass, Michael tried to focus. Fortunately, the complex genius of the system helped with that. He could spend months detailing this, and he almost regretted that they wouldn't have time. It was barely half an hour before he found the fault, a relay that had gotten interrupted when the door had opened for them. As soon as he bypassed it, the console started humming, and the lights flickered back to life. "Ha! Got it!" he cheered, grinning at Mainz unabashedly, shaking his curls out of his eyes. "Good job," Mainz said, rising, handing him back his hat. Their hands brushed briefly. Mainz seemed strangely flustered. Definitely earned that dinner, Michael grinned, dropping his head back on his head.
You make a lot of assumptions, Mr. Garin, Mayne said, looking at Michael with that perfectly neutral expression.
Michael felt a flush quickly spread across his neck and face. He started to splutter.
Shit, he really fucked it up.
How do you know that Vulcans even eat? Mayne asked, like that was a legitimate fucking question. Michael was too flabbergasted to respond. Mayne looked at him for a moment longer, lips quirked upward in a slight smirk, before he moved away, restarting the exploration of the facility. Apparently Captain Mayne had a sense of humor. It wasn't very good, truth be told. But Michael was delighted anyway.
Alex could definitely see why Garin would annoy his father and the rest of the Admiralty. But he'd rapidly come to like him, even trust him quite a bit. His brain moved remarkably quickly, often faster than even the most skilled Vulcan science officers. And even if his choices weren't typically logical, Alex could admit that they were usually the right ones. It soon was the fact that any time Alex led an away mission that required an engineer, he chose Lieutenant Garin unless there was some pressing reason to leave him on the ship, much to the amusement of his chief medical officer and first officer.
Don't worry, Commander DeLuca said as they left the briefing room, smoothing her hands over the short skirt of her gold command uniform. The Rigel 10 mission requires an engineer, so you can bring your favorite along.
Alex snorted. I do not play favorites, number one.
Right, Kyle said, incredulously. So you've just forgotten that you have 30 other qualified engineers.
Alex shot him a cool look with an arched eyebrow.
Normally it would be considered withering, but his command team was made of sterner stuff.
Kyle, not so subtly, bit a laugh.
Alex sighed, just a little.
He's the quickest thinker of the entire engineering team. He's the logical pick.
Oh, yeah. This is all about logic, Maria said dryly, giving Kyle a look that was loaded with significance.
Alex pretended not to see it. They could both suck it. He hadn't lied. Garin was both lightning fast and the most creative of the engineering team. By any metric, he was the right guy to take.
It was also really funny. Alex wasn't accustomed to laughing. He tended to lean pretty hard into his Vulcan side, preferring it to his father's heritage. And Vulcans didn't do humor, really. Well, not in the way most species did anyway. But Michael was invariably able to crack that self-control, get a smile, even a chuckle. And he particularly loved to employ it during tense moments.
Not gonna kill you, right? Doing that, Garin asked, poking his head from underneath the console of their shuttle.
A malfunction had forced them to crash land on a rather inhospitable planet, the atmosphere of which would burn their skin if it seeped through their shields. But of course said shields were also keeping them from transporting out. It was a tense moment, but by this point, Alex had kind of become comfortable with just waiting for Garin to figure it out. It was much more logical to waste his own time rather than waste the ship's time on a pointless rescue mission or change its orders when he had a perfectly capable and charming engineer with him. Besides, watching Garin work wasn't a hardship. Alex rolled his eyes.
I'm only half Vulcan.
Garin shrugged.
Good. Wasn't sure if you're like Selenisarius Clandiflorus.
At Alex's frown, Garin continued. Night-blooming flower. Blooms once and dies. It's gorgeous, like your smile.
An interest in botany, Lieutenant?
Alex asked, and he knew it was a little stiff. But no matter how often it happened, Garin always took him aback with his flirtation.
Michael laughed softly. Ah, and terrabiology shares a few similarities with earth plants and fungi. Helps to have a rudimentary knowledge. Alex had a feeling his knowledge and interest was more than just passing.
Fascinating.
Sure, Garen said. I could tell you more about it over dinner. If I recall, you still owe me one.
Alex let himself smile, slowly. Not unrestrained, but calmly.
Yeah, I do owe you one dinner. One dinner turned to two, turned to three. Turned to taking a walk through the atrium. To listening to the ship's quartet together. To looking the other way when Michael somehow managed to get a bottle of whiskey on board. To spending the night in Michael's quarters, sharing said bottle, and by turns arguing about the philosophy of invention. Or at least that was the plan, at first.
Wait, sorry, Michael said, moving a box of parts from his couch while Alex stood back watching with a bemused smile on his face. They were both out of uniform. This was the first time Alex had seen Michael in anything but his engineering reds. He wasn't sure what he actually expected, but the jeans worn to velvety softness and a white t-shirt with more than one or two frayed edges wasn't it. Even so, it immediately was obvious that it suited him. And suddenly, Alex understood the near-ubiquitous cowboy hat that Michael still insisted on wearing. What had actually been more surprising to see was the disarray in the lieutenant's quarters. It had the impression that Michael tended to be neat. After all, as the adopted child of Lieutenant Commander Sanders, he would have had to spend an appreciable amount of his childhood shipside, and there was typically no place for disarray on a starship.
"Is that oil staining your couch?" Alec asked, one eyebrow arched.
"Ah, yes," Michael flushed, using his powers, which Alex was only starting to get used to seeing, though apparently he used frequently while on the job, to flip the seat cushion to the cleaner side. "I like to tinker with old tech, for fun, but the oil has a tendency to get everywhere." He shrugged a little, sheepish, and it was strange to see Michael shy about his interests.
Alex shook his head, obviously giving the couch a slightly suspicious once over, before he deemed it clean enough and sat.
"Ancient Earth technology is messy, I suppose, but I thought it would be too simple for you."
"I mean," Michael began, grabbing a pair of lowball glasses and pouring out the whiskey. He nodded towards the pieces in the box. "That's just one part of an old truck engine. One day I'd like to build the whole thing. But right now, I only have those parts. And not all of them work properly."
"You just replicate what you need," Alex pointed out, frowning a little.
It seemed unnecessarily sentimental. He never really understood those who had a love affair with old Earth artifacts.
Michael rolled his eyes. "Not the same, Captain."
"Alex," he corrected, before he could really think that through. But he was sitting on Michael's couch drinking his whiskey. He could afford a little relaxation of protocol, he supposed. Michael's smile was a little too broad, a little too warm. "Alex." And he liked it. Liked the way Michael smiled, the way Alex's name sounded in his mouth. Alex swallowed, took a small zip of his drink. "Tell me about your truck," he prodded, just to see Michael's eyes light up. Michael shifted, plopping down next to Alex, close. His knee against Alex's thigh, all grins and animated hands as he spoke. And Terrence apparently had a very different sense of personal space. Closer to humans, he supposed. Michael had been raised by one, so it made sense that he behaved more like them. Not that he minded. This close he could smell the petrichor, which Alex knew and Terrence all smelled like. He'd grown accustomed to it. After all, the scent lingered in the bridge whenever Isabel Evans was at the helm and filled the security office where Max Evans spent most of his time. However, neither could compare to the way Michael smelled. It was like rain in the Vulcan desert, cool and comforting, fragrant like the blossoms Michael liked to talk about. Alex leaned a little against the back of the couch, feeling himself relax further as Michael spoke excitedly about his projects and his siblings. He watched as Michael's hand reached for Alex's leg,
the one pressed against his, and it was redundant to compare him again to the desert, but the warmth of him reminded Alex of the comfort of Vulcan, the safety. He watched as Michael's eyes drifted up to meet Alex's, fingers hovering carefully over his knee, before settling his hand back onto the couch again, a little unsure frown on his face. A moment later, his hand started to toy awkwardly with a glass of whiskey, as if seeking something to do. Alex was mesmerized by those hands, the strength in the shape of his palms and the grace and dexterity in his long, slender fingers. He'd been distracted by them the entire time Michael had been talking, but especially now. Alex liked to watch them work, putting together or breaking apart bits of machinery Alex would never know the names of, or idly twirling a hyperspanner as he worked out complex problems in his head. Alex couldn't even make himself feel vaguely guilty over the interest. Especially not now, as Michael's fingers circled the rim of his glass, pressed along the sides. It might not have been, but it felt as if it were a deliberate seduction. "You said you played, right?" Michael was saying, and Alex started. He'd almost missed the topic change. "Hmm," Alex had to pull his eyes back up to Michael's face. "You never did tell me what," he said, chewing on his lip in uncertainty, and Alex frowned. It wasn't a terribly personal question, but Michael's whole demeanor had changed, and Alex wondered what exactly caused the change. "Guitar." "Well," Alex replied, "still learning the Vulcan lyre. I only started learning it when I was 11, when I moved to Vulcan. So please, don't ask me to play that one yet." Alex dragged Michael's hands as it raked through his gorgeous mess of curls. He caught Alex's eyes before he spoke, smile a little tentative. "Would you, if I asked?" "I would, should you ask." Alex swallowed and set his glass down carefully on Michael's over-cluttered coffee table. Michael's eyes were bright, and there was nothing tentative in his smile now. He was back to toying with the rim of his glass, and his scent and warmth were deliciously overwhelming. The urge to touch was growing, as it ever was when in close proximity to Michael, breaking down all his carefully constructed walls, making him want to do, to act. Alex needed to touch him, Vulcan primness be damned. Holding Michael's eyes, Alex raised his hand, spreading apart his ring and middle finger. "Oh." Michael looked a little perplexed, surprised. But he lifted the hand that had been teasing the rim of his glass and copied him, with only a moment of struggle to get his fingers to cooperate. And Alex felt impossibly warmer. It was already almost too much, in that way it always felt when he chucked ritual and propriety and just allowed himself to feel. He pressed their hands together, palm to palm, holding Michael's eyes, his breath catching a little. Michael's hand was rough, expectedly so. An engineer's hands were destined to be calloused, but warm and soft at the same time. Alex breathed out slowly and tried not to shiver, tried not to let his mind run away with him. Michael smiled back slowly. Their hands held together for several breaths. Before Michael's hand slid, rough fingers starting to wrap around Alex's in a gentle, warm grip. Alex inhaled sharply, causing Michael to stop momentarily before brushing his thumb against Alex's knuckles. Alex didn't see it so much as feel the rough pad of Michael's thumb, as if it were stroking along every nerve in his body. His eyes were anchored on Michael, who was looking back, soft and curious. The generous mouth curled into a bemused smile. Alex pulled their hands apart gently, just enough so he could slowly trace his index and middle finger across Michael's palm, up the junction where thumb and index finger met. Alex's touch was a gentle caress, a soft press of his fingers. Slow and careful, but deliberate in its intention, in his attraction, unlike the blazing fire Alex felt for Michael. That fire could easily escape control if Alex was not careful. And as much as he embraced the mantra that unbridled emotion and passion was dangerous,
For the first time in a long time, he wanted to let go, wanted to burn. But Michael did not respond in kind, nor did he even attempt a clumsy grab of his hand again. Confusion played on his face, and perhaps that was for the best, Alex thought. Alex let out a heavy breath, his palm and fingertips still tingling from Michael's touch. Alex pressed his hands together, an echo of the warm pressure of Michael's hand.
"It's getting late," he murmured.
Michael still looked bewildered, dragging his hand through his hair, but he didn't protest. For perhaps the first time, Alex honestly regretted not coming of age on Earth. Although Michael wasn't human, he had been raised by them, and human mating rituals were so very different from Vulcan.
Chapter 2. Michael groaned and downed a glass of whiskey.
"Hey, slow down. I only have so much of that," Max protested, annoyed enough to switch back to speaking out loud. When alone together, Michael and his siblings tended to slip out of verbal communication and into their native telepathy. Even after all these years, it still felt so much more natural to communicate this way. And it was a hell of a lot more efficient. Ideas and emotions all bundled up in a single stream of information. Less room for misunderstanding.
"I was the one that got it for you, so I can drink it all I want," Michael replied. It was family dinner night, and Max was hosting this evening. So they were sitting in Max's cozy quarters, which somehow felt like he had taken the best part of American Southwest and brought it to space with him. Warm woven blankets, earth-toned walls, and a collection of physical books. Somehow it didn't feel like they were on ship at all.
"Something bothering you, brother?" Isabel asked, mental voice soft and warm with concern, ruffling his curls sympathetically.
"Just the captain," Michael let out a frustrated breath.
Days later, Michael was still feeling awkward, still unsure how exactly to feel about that night in his quarters.
Was it a success? A failure?
As far as Michael could tell, Alex seemed to like him. But what the fuck was that with their hands?
"I thought you guys were getting along."
Max's thoughts were heavy with dismay, and the fear that Michael was going to get himself kicked off the ship. The reaction was expected, if annoying. When Michael first boarded the Roswell, he got 3 lectures from Max, and 1 each from Isabel and Sanders, the latter mostly consisting of curse words laced with questions about his intelligence. It had been enough to make him want to cause problems.
"No, we are," Michael corrected, then paused, making a face, likely broadcasting all his frustrations and insecurities to his siblings.
He took a deep drink from his glass.
"We were. God, I wish Vulcans were psychic. Be a hell of a lot easier to communicate if we didn't have to deal with fucking words all the time."
"They are, as a matter of fact," Isabel said dryly, and a little exacerbated. Michael blinked.
"Wait, really?"
"Touch telepaths. Not quite the same as us. But not that far apart either," Isabel said. And from the heat of the emotions he could sense from her, he knew that he definitely did not need the backstory on that.
"What's going on with you and the captain, though?"
"Touch telepaths." Michael tucked that piece of information away. Not that he knew what he'd do with it. He shook his head, grabbing the bottle and pouring himself some more. "I don't know. I keep thinking there's something there." And then he gets all stiff.
"Wait. Are you actually..."
She paused, eyes wide with shock. "Are you trying to seduce Captain Maines?" she asked, the words feeling a little unnaturally loud after several moments of silence, and he suppressed the urge to shush her. Max groaned and poured himself another drink. He didn't actually call Michael moron, but the feeling opinion was projected. Loudly. Where have you been? Michael asked dryly, answering out loud, because there was nothing wrong with this, and it was fine to give voice to, and he was unrepentant. Damn it.
He's your commanding officer, Max complained.
He's hot, Michael said with a shrug.
But sadly, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that I'm just not his type.
Isabel looked calculating, grabbing the whiskey bottle and topping Michael off.
What makes you think that? She asked, aiming for innocent curiosity. And though Michael could see right through her act, he was frustrated enough to play along.
He shrugged again, taking another drink from his glass.
I keep thinking he's into... Michael made a face. Two nights ago we were having this moment, and I thought he was going to kiss me. But he literally just played with my fingers the entire time. Didn't even let me hold his hand.
Isabel dropped her face into her hand, equal parts disbelief, horror, and frustration coming off her in waves.
Michael, please! For the love of God, please tell me you didn't actually try to just hold his hand.
What's so wrong with that? He asked with a frown, worried. Michael glanced at Max, but he looked just as bewildered. Isabel took a breath, looking up as if praying to the stars for patience, and Michael could sense lecturing coming, but she just dropped her face back into her hands a moment later. Gathering strength, he guessed. He was going to yell at her to stop freaking him out. This whole situation with Alex was confusing enough without the added anxiety. But before he could start, Max cut in, apparently resigned to the fact that Michael would be a dumbass no matter what he said.
Oh, fuck you, Max.
You guys met in your room, right? Max asked. Tell me you at least made the place nice for him.
Michael flushed. I didn't have time. It was kind of impromptu.
Michael! The depth of Max's disapproval was normally reserved for dog-earing books and any other book-related crimes, really. Max was pretty simple. It's important to make sure that your space is welcoming. Liz and I started off hot and cold, too, but it really helped us along. Max nodded his head towards the large space by the window. Isabel had helped him feng shui all his furniture, so the room didn't feel overcrowded, and there was enough room for Liz to dance comfortably.
He's not wrong. It's important to make your space comfortable, Isabel said, finally lifting her face from her hands. Honestly, she was so dramatic sometimes. But more importantly, Michael, I am begging you to read one fucking book about Vulcans. Just one. Anyone.
Unfortunately, Max didn't have any books on Vulcans, so once back in the privacy of his quarters, he had to turn to the computer banks. Michael started working off his clothes as the monotonous feminine voice began to relay its findings. All business, no judgment. He felt silly expecting anything else. Fucking hell, Alex was really getting to him. Vulcans from the planet Vulcan. Renowned for their strict adherence to the philosophy of logic. First contact with humans on April 5, 2063. Notable figures include Sarek of Vulcan, Tapao of Vulcan, Sarek of Vulcan. The computer went on, listing notable Vulcan ambassadors and Starfleet officers, and nothing else. Not even a brief on common cultural practice. Michael frowned. That couldn't be it. Maybe his initial question had been too broad. Computer, what about Vulcan? He stumbled over it a little, feeling ridiculous. But it was stupid to play coy with a computer. Courtship. The discordant humming typing sound of the computer filled the room again. Shorter this time. Unknown, the computer declared, flatly. And this time the response definitely felt a little judgmental. Michael frowned again. What? Was something wrong with the computer? Computer, pull up Antaran courtship practices. Sexual contact typically occurs early in Antaran relationships and establishes early compatibility within the species. In pre-industrial Antaran culture, when a suitable mate was found, the pursuing partner would establish a rhizomatic offshoot, expanding the network of the larger colony.
In modern times, it is common for a pursuing partner to build a welcoming living space within the supercolony in order to impress their partner with their resourcefulness and creativity. If these overtures are reciprocated...
That's enough, Michael said hurriedly. Obviously, the computer was working, and there was only so much one could listen to that computerized voice clinically describing your people's, your cultural practices.
Computer, pull up Vulcan. Here Michael paused again, trying to think of a way to phrase the question that didn't feel so dehumanizing, for lack of a better, more specific, inclusive word.
Traditions.
He fiddled with a bit of machinery while he waited, the computer crunching away like it was doing complex quantum mechanics and not reviewing the history tapes on Federation's closest stellar allies. Or pet aliens, as the Klingons like to put it. But it wasn't long anyway.
Unknown.
Michael made a frustrated noise.
Well, a big fucking help you are, he said under his breath.
Absolutely not, Alex said, firmly and as calmly as he could manage. You're not going in there alone without proper protective equipment.
That's final.
I can handle it, Michael countered, waving his tricorder in frustration. But Alex was going to need a lot more than preliminary tricorder readings before letting Michael run into a mind full of strange gases. Alex could feel himself practically bristling, and despite his calm outward appearance, Maria sensed it. Can't hide anything from a betazoid. She rested a hand on the back of his arm, a subtle reminder to calm down. It isn't that we don't trust you, Lieutenant, she began. It's simply that there's no reason to suspect that going in without protection is anything more than some kind of suicide mission. Alex was prepared to add to that, but there was yelling from outside the mine they were currently arguing in. The residents of the pre-war planet looking for them. The only thing keeping them from being caught was just a small wooden door that covered the mine shaft. Prudently, they waited in silence until the yelling and the footsteps subsided. Truly, this was one of those days where Murphy's Law tried to prove to Alex that it was real and it had a vendetta against him. When his day started, his list of tasks consisted mostly of paperwork, meetings, and figuring out how to address how awkward and unsure Michael had become after the night in his room. But before he could do any of that, the Nightingale effect, some kind of radiation wave that had only been observed once or twice before, had swept over their ship, sapping their power supplies and draining their dilithium crystals, stranding them in a sector devoid of any warp-capable societies. At the moment, the Roswell was barely limping on impulse power, her crew reliant on their emergency power to keep any number of critical systems, including life support, going. And that power was slipping away, fast. Their only hope was to gather more dilithium and get their warp capabilities back so they could travel back to a friendly warp-capable planet before they lost auxiliary power and life support. The planet they were currently arguing on was the nearest one with dilithium crystals.
Great.
Unfortunately, being a pre-warp society, they had to somehow get down there and find some crystals without being caught and violating the Prime Directive. Of course, because this was a truly awful day, they got spotted. And like in most situations where Alex in particular got made by pre-warp societies, immediately the locals started screaming about devils and looking for pitchforks. Considering that they were a species of blue hairy mops with arms, Alex really thought they should shut up with the appearance-specific insults.
Look, it's not like we have a lot of options, Michael shot back in a low but no less frustrated hiss when the coast seemed clear.
Maria frowned at him, so he added belatedly,
Sir,
we can't keep diverting auxiliary power away from life support to transport. The Roswell is running out of time. Michael wasn't wrong. Alex and Maria both knew it. Dilithium lay at the bottom of these mining shafts, and they were under a time crunch. Several time crunches. But they'd realized, once they'd gotten into the entrance to the mine shafts, that they were filled with some kind of heavier-than-air gas, naturally occurring and likely released by the mining process. As far as Alex could tell, the gas was no more than an annoyance to the local population, but initial analysis showed trace amounts of cicasin, a substance known to be toxic to most Federation member races, Betazoid, human, and Vulcan included. The jury was out on Antarans, but Alex really did not need to test that hypothesis the hard way.
"You're not going to do the Roswell any good if you're dead,"
Alex shook his head. "It was too risky. We'll find another way. I'm sure you can fashion some kind of life support."
"Sure," Michael cut him off. "If I had time, and if there weren't a planet full of pissed-off Muppet ranchers out there." "I am going. You can write me up for insubordination after we save the damn ship," he finished, firmly, starting down the mineshaft, plunging into darkness.
"Lieutenant!" Alex snapped, taking a step after him, too, feeling his throat start to close just a little. And then, suddenly, he was pushed back several steps by a firm yet gentle pressure on his chest, Michael glaring at him from several feet down the shaft. "Stay there." Without another word, Michael turned back around to disappear into the dark of the mine shaft. "Damn it." Alex let out a heavy breath, resisting the urge to kick at a handful of rocks, swearing up and down in his head that if Michael came back alive, he would absolutely murder him. He let himself stew in those irrational human thoughts for a moment or two. "Alex, you need to relax," Maria said, her voice steady and annoyingly calm.
"I'm fine," he started, but she tilted her head with a flat look, obviously not believing him for a moment.
"Your Vulcan is slipping," Maria said blandly in response. He rolled his eyes, but didn't deny it. No matter how intensely he embraced logic, how hard he trained his mind, he had still lived 11 years of his life on his father's homeworld, picking up bad habits.
"He's an insubordinate idiot, and he's going to get us all killed. And I should have listened."
"That's not why you're angry." She shook her head, sitting and patting the ground next to her. "Come on, nothing to do but talk."
Alex definitely did not want to talk.
"Alex," Maria prompted again, "he'll be fine. In the meantime, you two have been circling each other for months, and I've been waiting patiently, I might add, this whole time for details." That brought him up short, cut through the anger and anxiety.
"I don't know what you mean," he started, trying to dismiss it out of hand. Not sitting, though. He felt like pacing, even though there was only room for a half dozen steps in either direction.
Maria raised an eyebrow slowly. "You know exactly what I mean."
"Circling each other, though?" he said a little weakly. "They could not have been that obvious. Well, okay, maybe Michael was. But not him." "I'm not sure of that."
She rolled her eyes. "Ah, yes. That's why engineering smells like a damn monsoon every time you walk in." Alex frowned. He knew she was trying to distract him. And, unfortunately, it was working.
"What are you talking about? They all smell like that."
Maria raised an eyebrow slowly. "Yeah, that smell is Michael wanting to jump your bones," she said bluntly.
"So, by your logic, the Antarans are all horny, all the time?"
Alex protested, hating the idea of his private business just out there for the entire ship to see, and apparently smell.
"I mean," Maria laughed at the disbelieving look on Alex's face, leaning her head back against the rock of the mineshaft.
"God, Alex, they all have this rain smell, but it's a difference in degree and quality."
"Like with Max?
He always smells like a desert storm, right? But haven't you noticed when Liz is around it gets stronger, and there's an electric quality to it,
Like ozone? Yeah, okay. He had noticed that about Max. But he also noticed who Maria didn't mention. And Isabel? Like cheap perfume, Maria said primly. Overly wet and floral. It felt like a low blow, and not terribly honest. To be fair, Maria and Isabel did love to snipe at each other, rank be damned. So the meanness of her response wasn't a surprise. It just had the feel of a deflection. Maria, he said, shaking his head. Anyway, she replied. He frowned. Oh, so his romantic life was fair game, but hers wasn't? She shrugged unrepentantly and continued. Have you seen his quarters yet? Has he invited you over? That was not the question he expected, and it threw him off balance. Yes, Alex said slowly. What is the relevance? Just wondering what his room was like. There was an ulterior motive there, but he could not parse it for the life of him. Surprisingly cluttered and crease-stained, I found it odd. Garen's usually very methodical in his work. He hoped that that was the end of the probing questions about what may or may not have transpired that night. Maria tilted her head a little, looking surprised. That is odd, she said after a minute. When Max was chasing after Liz, that place was spotless. Liz says he rearranged the furniture half a dozen times and always had her favorite food and drinks conveniently out. That made Alex stop short, caused him to question the source of Michael's awkwardness. Alex tilted his head, regarding her curiously. Are you implying that because his room is messy, that he's not interested? And it didn't make sense to him, especially considering she had just stated that he'd been obviously lusting after him. Maria shook her head. It's something to do with setting down roots. She stopped talking at Alex's annoyed sound. I don't think it has anything to do with that. She sighed. As a Vulcan, you should know that there's no bypassing biology. And Terran's nest, it's an instinct. No, it was an impromptu meeting, and... He cut himself off, glaring at Maria, who had a knowing look in her eye. Not one more word. That's an order, Maria. She held up her hands, dropping it, at least for the moment, and Alex tried not to let out a sigh of relief. He looked back down the mineshaft, where Michael was currently putting himself in danger in order to save Alex's ship. Yet all Alex wanted to do was run down there, grab him, and demand to know why Michael wasn't building a nest for him. Alex could not have been more forward, more obvious with his intention that night in Michael's room. He let out an annoyed breath, trying to regain control of himself. This is ridiculous, he growled under his breath, resuming his pacing. He needed to focus. Maria let him for several minutes, but she was watching him with a frown that bordered on concern, and eventually he couldn't help but snap at her. Speak, number one. Oh, the gag order lifted? She asked dryly. But she sobered at his glare. Alex, are you feeling okay? She asked a little hesitantly.
As always, I am fine.
Sorry, it's just that you're somehow even more cranky than usual. When was the last time you ate?
I don't see how that is relevant, he frowned.
I mean, look, you're kind of a cranky son of a bitch on the best of days, Maria started. And I appreciate that about you. Also, this isn't exactly one of your best days. Still, you're a bit pricklier than normal. Actually, you have been for a couple of days. Did you and Garen have some kind of fight?
No, Alex frowned. The only thing currently bothering me is Mr. Garen's utter disregard for his own safety.
You just feel... Maria paused, considering her words. Frayed at the edges. Alex didn't respond, resuming his pacing, which Maria watched with quiet concern. He supposed that was better than her insistent questions.
but they had their effect. It was illogical to deny that something was bothering him. But it was easy to just assume it was Michael. He was the current cause of his anxieties. Her question still sat there in the back of his mind. It seemed like hours that they waited there, in tense silence. But eventually they could see Garen's light as he climbed back up the shaft. Alex let out an angry, relieved breath, then reminded himself sharply to rein it in.
"You were successful, Lieutenant Garen?"
he asked, as Michael was finally visible, face smudged with dirt, but looking no worse for wear. Relieved, Alex moved closer, tricorder in hand, looking him over for any sign of poisoning. Thankfully, Michael seemed fine. "One bag full of dilithium," Michael confirmed. "Ready to get the hell out of here?" Maria's communicator was already in her hand. "3 to beam aboard." Sanders was waiting for them in the transporter bay.
"Took you long enough," he said,
grabbing the bag of crystals out of Michael's hand. "We had a little local color to deal with," Michael said, stepping off the transport pad. Sanders was already moving out the door for engineering, Maria following him, discussing ETAs and next steps. Michael was obviously about to follow them, as if he hadn't just exposed himself to a potentially lethal toxin. Alex reached to stop him, hand on his shoulder.
"Mr. Garen, I'd like you to report directly to sickbay."
"Yeah, after I get the warp core running," Michael replied dryly, looking back over his shoulder at him.
"Stop," Alex growled, the sound loud to his own ears, startling.
But Michael was infuriatingly stubborn.
"I am done with your insubordination. You will report to sickbay, and that is an order. If you don't follow it, I will be forced to..."
He cut off, realizing in one sickening moment that he sounded like his father. And then realization shot through him. Maria had not been wrong about his irritable mood, but she had been wrong as to why. They stood there for a long moment, staring at each other. Michael's eyes wide, mouth a little slack, inviting. Alex's breath was harsh to his own ears, his heartbeat thundering, blood hot in his veins. "Okay," Michael said, softly, resting his hand on Alex's, gently. "Okay, I'll go." His touch felt like fire. Alex had to practically peel his fingers off Michael's shoulder, nodding stiffly, not trusting himself to do more. Shit. Oh, shit.
"It's been 4 hours now since I've wandered through your place. And when I sleep on your couch, I feel very safe. And when you bring the blankets, I cover up my face. I do. Love you. I do."
Chapter 3. "Warp is up and running, Commander," Sanders said tiredly through the comm. "We're a go." Okay, so Michael hadn't gone to sickbay. He knew instinctively that he hadn't needed to. Something about those mines had reminded him of home, the deep caves lit up by phosphorescent mushrooms that his mother would sometimes take him to on materials runs. Whatever was in that gas, it was completely benign to him. Running out of oxygen and heat, however, wouldn't be. It had taken hours to get done, since they were working with raw dilithium. And even after that, they had to finish repairs on the reactor support systems that the Nightingale effect had ruined. Michael at some point had passed out from exhaustion, but the low hum of the warp engine had woken him up a couple of hours later. Sanders must have left him to sleep. The bastard. "Fantastic news, Mr. Sanders," DeLuca responded over the comm, which was odd. "All right, Mr. Evans. Warp factor 8, if you please." Michael heard Isabel's relieved, "Aye, Commander," coming over the comm, before Sanders cut the feed, already grumbling about how they were going to break his ship going so damn fast, as if there was much of a choice.
Michael rubbed his hand over his face and sat up. Bastard, he called over to Sanders, who snorted. You needed sleep, kid. Just be glad I didn't call Dr. Valenti to cart your ass to sickbay.
Where's the captain? He asked.
It should be Alex on the bridge, taking Sanders' calls. Not Luca. Sanders shrugged. Fuck if I know. Tried to reach him a couple of times, but was routed to Luca. Must be dealing with some important captain's business.
What's more important than this? Michael asked, not really expecting an answer.
But of course Sanders wouldn't let a stupid question go.
I don't know, kid. He's your boyfriend.
He pulled out a flask and took a long drink, waving his free hand dismissively and starting to walk off. Anyway, I'm going to see if I can jerry-rig something that can use the excess dilithium to give extra power to the life support systems. We're still a long way from the nearest starbase.
Michael flushed.
Sanders was always kind of a sarcastic asshole. It was where Michael learned it, after all. But still, Alex wasn't his boyfriend. After that scene in the transporter room, he had no clue what was going on, honestly.
I'll help, he said, getting up.
Sanders nodded and passed him the flask when he caught up. Hours went by as they worked, passing tools back and forth, not talking much. It was a welcome relief, letting Michael work through his tangled, scattered thoughts. No, Alex wasn't his boyfriend. But Michael actually did want that. He just wasn't entirely sure what Alex wanted. By the time they'd finished rigging a rudimentary power supply, Michael was determined. He was going to go actually talk to Alex, figure the shit out, get a clear yes or no. The opportunity came sooner than Michael had expected. The only equipment that had survived the Nightingale effect had been the shuttles, possibly because they had all been shut down at the time. Michael had been alone in the shuttle bay, scavenging for parts he could use in their patchwork repairs, when he heard the bay doors open and close. Frowning, he pulled his head out of the side panel he'd been digging around in, seeing Alex stalking in. At first he thought he'd been made, thought Alex was angry, walking in to rip him a new one for not being in sick bay. But then he realized that Alex was heading directly for one of the other shuttles, heard the hum of it turning on at Alex's verbal command. Michael's frown only deepened at the sight of him. He looked. Well, the fact that Alex looked anything other than cool and collected was already strange. But he looked frazzled, and he was moving fast. And something just felt off. Michael wasn't in the habit of questioning his instincts. Al, Captain, Michael called, moving towards him. Alex stopped, back ramrod straight. There was so much tension in his shoulders, Michael thought they'd break under the pressure. Lieutenant. Alex's voice even sounded brittle, and he didn't turn around to look at Michael. Not immediately, anyway.
What are you doing here?
Michael winced, already expecting a lecture. Not that Michael was a stranger to lectures, but from Alex it would be the fucking worst.
Are you okay? He asked, both deflecting the question and because he was actually worried. He'd never seen Alex look like this.
Alex took a visible breath, hands clasped behind his back, his expression an attempt at impassive. Maybe if Michael didn't spend all his time observing him, picking up the tells for his moods, Michael would have bought it, would not have noticed the barely there quiver in his voice.
Yes, working on repairs?
Yeah, Michael said. He rubbed his hands on his thighs, trying to get the dirt off him. Alex tracked the movement with his eyes.
Are you sure you're...
Alex was definitely glaring now. I'm fine, Lieutenant. Michael almost wanted to throw up his hands and walk away at that blatant lie. And he might have, if it weren't for a strange look in Alex's eye, the thin line of sweat at his brow.
Okay, I believe you. It's just that you were about to climb into that shuttle, and I'm really not sure as to why. There's nowhere to go. We're still deep in the bumfuck sector, and considering how fast we're moving...
He trailed off.
Lieutenant, it's not your place to question your captains. You know, fuck you with that shit, Michael said, annoyance superseding his concern, pushing away any hesitation. Michael had had a 48-hour day. He was tired and done with whatever Vulcan nonsense Alex was playing at. We're not playing this rank bullshit. You and I are well past that shit, and you know it. He stepped closer, right into Alex's space, watched Alex's nostrils flare. What the hell is going on, Alex? Alex's jaw tightened, even as he leaned into Michael, almost imperceptibly. Michael was caught briefly by the heat in Alex's dark eyes before he glanced away at the door to the shuttle bay. He hesitated for a moment before nodding towards the shuttle's open door. Whatever was on his mind, he clearly did not want to be overheard. Alex was burning, had been burning for hours. It felt like the moment he'd realized what was going on, everything had intensified. Upon far. The loss of appetite, the sleeplessness, the ever-mounting irritability that culminated in Alex shouting at a stunned Michael in the transporter room. Pawn fucking far. Alex had wanted to scream. The timing could not have been more inconvenient. Out in the middle of fucking nowhere, with Michael standing in front of him. Beautiful and so warm, Alex could practically feel him without closing the distance between them. He wasn't exactly proud of his behavior, but he had run off to his room to collect himself. No, to hide, the moment he realized what was going on. It had been easy to convince Maria to handle things. She was already aware that something was wrong with him, even if she had no idea what. And he'd spent his time trying to keep control while knowing that Michael was wandering around in the lower decks, oblivious to Alex's need. Because no, he was not inflicting this on Michael. They were barely anything to each other. Perhaps they could be, given time. But time was a luxury they'd just run out of. He was going to die. Michael was standing in the shuttle with him, staring at Alex, gorgeous features marked with concern. For him. Alex tried to breathe through it. The need, the desire was primal, primitive. It was the biology of his mother's people, the only part that modern life and logic could not excise. So it had been tempered, like everything else in Vulcan society, with ritual, and barring that, held down by sheer force of will. His father always said he was willful, and he was putting that to the test now. His control on his desires tighter than the grip he had on the back of a chair. Alex had done his best. But no matter how much he meditated or played his now broken guitar, he could not keep hold of his control for much longer. And Michael needed to understand that Alex needed to be left alone, because he would rather accept death than put Michael through the shame of Ponfar. Alex took a deep breath, trying to gather his thoughts. "I know we have shared intimacy," Alex began, stumbling over the word. Low groan of metal distracted him from what he was going to say next. They both looked in the direction of the sound to see that the chair Alex had been gripping had bowed under the force of his grip. And if that was some kind of metaphor, the universe could suck it. "Alex," Michael said, voice heavy with concern, soft like Alex were some small woodland animal and not something incredibly dangerous. "I can't do this," Alex said. He would just have to lock himself in his room. Wait it out. 8 days. Michael said when Alex tried to make his way around him, moving to block Alex's escape, open palm resting against the center of Alex's chest. "Spit it out, Alex." Of all the things Michael had expected to happen when he blocked Alex's escape,
Alex grabbing his wrist in a tight grip, was not it. His hand on Michael's wrist was hot like brand against his skin as he brought Michael's hand up to press an achingly gentle kiss against his palm. Alex, Michael breathed, trying to catch his eyes, but Alex was avoiding it, stubbornly staring at his hand wrapped around Michael's wrist. Before Michael could say another word, he was being bodily shoved up against the wall of the shuttle, pinned there by Alex's bruising grip on his wrist, by the heat of Alex's body. Alex was breathing hard against him, warm breath tickling at the curls by Michael's ear. Michael frowned, would have shoved Alex back with his TK, if not for the fact that Alex was trembling against him, and he was too damn hot. Like a damn furnace. Michael's concern and irritation were warring with each other. As nice as Alex felt against him, as bewildering as this entire moment was, Michael was getting kind of sick of it. What the hell was going on? Alex? Do you know how Vulcans choose their mates, Michael? Alex asked, breath hot against the shell of Michael's ear. I would assume quite logically, Michael replied, dryly, trying to think past the hammering of his own heart. Alex chuckled softly, and it sounded defeated. Every 7 years, Michael, Alex started, startlingly calm, hand releasing Michael's wrist to slide up his palm, slowly, deliberately so, even as his fingers continued to tremble. And Michael could not help the shiver that ran down his spine in response. Vulcans go through something called Ponfar. Okay, Michael frowned. And that means what ex... Oh! Just then Alex shifted, pressed his hips against Michael's thigh, and holy hell. Okay, things were starting to make sense. It's got something to do with your friend down there? It was a dumb and crass thing to say. This was a serious situation, but honestly it was also funny. Stuffy, uptight Vulcans go into heat. The universe had a hell of a sense of humor. Alex dragged the tip of his nose along Michael's cheek, and Michael turned to meet the kiss he thought was coming. But all Alex did was press his forehead against Michael's, eyes closed, breath ragged. Michael waited, trapped between the cool metal wall and the solid warmth of Alex's body. I really like you, Michael. Clearly. That got a real laugh out of him, and Michael smiled, relaxed a little. Alex's fingers were still stroking Michael's palm, sliding up between his fingers, then back down again. And Michael was left thinking about the strength of Alex's resolve. He wondered if that stubbornness was due to his race, or if it was all Alex. You know I like you, right? He asked, softly, reaching with his free hand to Alex's waist, gripping him, pulling him closer. He tried to show Alex, through touch, how absolutely okay Michael was with everything, now that he knew what was going on. Your feelings have been complicated. Alex shook his head, his voice rough. I have no wish to force this on you. Michael laughed then. Who said they were complicated? I like you, and I very much want you to keep touching me. All Michael ever wanted was for Alex to never stop touching him. Whatever was left of Alex's control palpably wavered. He opened his eyes. This close he was hard to focus on, but Michael could feel the heat of his gaze. I don't want to hurt you. I do not trust myself in this state. Alex's hand stilled its soft caress, and Michael, worried Alex would pull away, used his TK to hold their bodies together. But it was a fair concern. Michael hadn't forgotten how the back of that shuttle chair, made of hard plastic and metal, crumpled in Alex's grip. The strength of Vulcans was deceptive, easy to forget about, due to their ironclad control. Well, it would be a fair concern if Michael were some squishy human with no defenses. But Alex was underestimating him. I can take care of myself, Michael responded, parting his legs, and dragging Alex impossibly closer with his power. "You don't understand," Alex began, roughly, stubborn, unnecessarily stubborn. But Michael didn't think it was him Alex was really fighting. "I do. I'm not underestimating you," Michael cut him off, reaching up to cup his face in his hand. Alex frowned at him, clearly about to start arguing, and Michael honestly did not understand how someone who was going into heat could be so damn obstinate about fucking. "You're underestimating me," Michael said, shoving Alex into an undamaged chair with a bit of power, holding him there with a little more, just enough to feel it keeping him in place. Alex didn't struggle, too stunned to do more than stare up at Michael, who gazed back at him, steadily, smug and unapologetic, as he lazily shrugged one shoulder. Michael dropped into his lap, straddling Alex's thighs, which were straining against the invisible pressure of Michael's power. But Michael didn't think he was struggling for freedom, not with how Alex's chest rose and fell with each ragged breath. Not with the way his hands scrabbled for Michael's waist, fingers digging in bruisingly. Fuck yes. Michael slid his fingers into soft, silky hair to grip the back of Alex's head and just looked at him. At his flushed cheek, iris blown so white his eyes looked almost black, tongue peeking out to wet his lips. Michael looked at him and leaned forward, Alex straining to meet him, and spoke, a hair's breadth from his lips. "I won't let you misstep, Alex. I won't let you hurt me. Let me help you. Let me be the safe space where you're free to let go." Alex struggled for a breath, too, to remain impassive. He could feel Alex's whole body tensing with the effort of it. And then, suddenly, the dam broke, and Alex was kissing him hard. Michael moaned at the press and slide of their lips, hungry and sloppy, all teeth and tongue now, as they desperately worked to find their rhythm. Finally, he could lose himself in just that kiss, in the desperate press of Alex's body. "Later," he told himself, dragging his hands down Alex's firm pecs and flat belly to the waistline of his pants. Michael wanted to strip Alex naked, wanted to spread him open, wanted to take his time. Michael wanted so much he wasn't sure where to begin, but he needed to keep hold of his senses. He'd promised, and he was going to keep that promise. Not that it would be a hardship. All he wanted to be was the place Alex could feel safe. Alex groaned when Michael finally pulled him out of the confines of his black uniform pants, licked his palm, and started to stroke him. It was obvious that it wouldn't be enough. Alex's cock was rock hard and an angry red, head already wet with pre-cum, hips making small aborted jerks into Michael's palm against his TK. He groaned Michael's name loudly, ripping the collar of his shirt aside and sinking his teeth into Michael's shoulder. At first, Michael thought he was muffling himself, only to realize he was being marked, claimed. At that, Michael's own cock, still trapped in the confines of his too tight pants, pulsed, leaving a wet spot. Fuck, that was good. "Fuck, Alex," Michael groaned, hand tightening around Alex's cock, lips catching on the pointed tip of his ear, before placing wet, open-mouthed kisses to his temple. There was another loud ripping sound, and Michael realized Alex had torn at the waistline of his pants. Michael didn't even think Alex realized what happened, too focused on getting his hands on Michael's ass, his grip bruising, parting his cheeks, long blunt fingers rubbing against his entrance, catching against his rim. Michael gasped, too dry, but also, "Yes, God, yes." He dragged back against the pressure, his awareness narrowing down just to Alex's hands, his mouth, sucking and biting distractingly down Michael's neck to his still-clothed chest. Fuck, they were still wearing too much. But Michael didn't think Alex could wait for them to strip. No, Alex's ability to wait had vanished a while ago, with his ability to think and speak, since all he managed was Michael's name between muffled moans. Alex's finger breached him, and Michael hissed, reaching back to grab his wrist,
tugging gently and then more forcefully when Alex growled, resisting. Michael just shushed him, kissing him, using his powers to hold Alex's hands to his back, because he didn't want there to be a moment where they weren't touching, even while Michael rose up just enough to yank his pants down and out of the way. When they got stuck in his stupid boots, he had to use his power to pull the lot off, and there was definitely more that got ripped. Oh well. It didn't matter, as long as he could be skin to skin with Alex. The delicious slide and press of their cocks made Michael whine, and he must have lost some control of TK, because one of Alex's hands was in his hair, gripping and pulling him back into another bruising kiss, the other back on Michael's ass, but thankfully just cupping, hauling him closer. Their cocks crept between their bellies, with just enough space for Michael's hand to wrap around them. Michael returned the kiss as best as he could, let himself get lost in the pleasure of their cocks fucking into his hand. They ground and slipped over each other, slick with nothing but their pre-cum. Fuck, he wanted to just let go. But that was Alex's job, right now. Michael needed to keep his head, needed to give Alex what he needed. Moaning softly, Michael pushed them apart a little, enough to cast an eye around the room, looking for something, anything, to make this go a little easier, so that he could make Alex feel good, but also keep his damn promise. Alex growled again in protest, trying to surge up to bite at Michael again. But this time, he held him back. I know, baby. Just gotta wait 1 second. God damn it, why couldn't Alex have done this closer to one of their rooms? Or at least closer to a damn replicator? He let out a sigh of relief, seeing a stashed mechanical bag. There was always some type of grease in them. It wasn't ideal, but it would do. He tugged it out from under the chair and pulled it over with his TK so he could lean over to rummage in it. Alex's hands were hungry, pulling at him, pressing him down into his lap with fierce intensity. Almost there, Alex. Just be patient. 1 more minute. Michael murmured, getting it open, the top slipping out of his hands and clattering to the floor. It didn't have to be much. He just needed to slick them up enough to prevent any real damage. He scooped some out and reached back, pressing fingers into himself, stretching. He leaned in close to Alex again, breathing against his mouth. Real soon. Alex kissed him, hands moving on his skin restlessly, but he seemed to understand enough not to try and grab Michael, his hands sliding slowly up his thighs, down, then back up again, over his hip and belly. When Alex wrapped his cock in his fist, Michael fell forward into him, their foreheads knocking against each other. Michael keened, and Alex made a soft, victorious noise. Michael breathed out a shaky, "fuck you," working himself open, faster, if not as carefully as he should. He needed this. He did not have the ironclad willpower of a Vulcan, and he wanted his fucking reward for all this fucking restraint. Alex reached up to cup his cheek. Michael leaned into it, breathing out slowly, and the world shifted. He and Alex weren't distinct entities anymore. Michael could feel every burning nerve in Alex, the intense need. He could feel the smooth warmth of his own body, the way Alex ached for him. And Tarrans were a psychic species, so it wasn't entirely unfamiliar to share a mind. But it was never like this. This was incredible. Michael abandoned the effort to prepare himself, more than ready, and reached to give Alex's cock a cursory couple of strokes with his looped hand before shifting over him, lining Alex up with his hole. And finally Michael let go, sinking down as Alex quickly fucked into him. "Fuck," Michael moaned at the stretch and burn. "Fuck," he said again as Alex ground his hips into him. The wise thing to do was wait, to adjust. But Michael wasn't really interested in the wise thing anymore. Not with how their feelings and desires were twisted up so tight around each other. Not with Alex hot and hard inside him. With the way Alex was holding Michael tight against his body. Alex had an arm around his waist, firmly urging him up, and Michael obeyed, only to drop back onto Alex's cock with a low groan. They started to rock together, breathing hard, breathing almost as one. Michael wrapped his arms around him, no longer worried about restraining Alex. He didn't need to. He knew Alex could feel him as surely as Michael could feel him. Alex's breath went a little more ragged, his hands clasping Michael, directing him more, so that Alex could fuck into him harder, never so much to really hurt, but enough to burn deliciously. Michael could do this forever, he thought in a daze. But Alex could not. He was too tightly coiled, too close to the edge, and Michael was too soft and warm and yielding. Let go, Alex. He thought it more than said it, but he knew that Alex could feel that, too. Alex pressed a hot, open-mouthed kiss to his shoulder over the mark he'd left earlier, moaning as he fucked up into him one last time, before pleasure, both white-hot and cooling, exploded through him. Michael had no option but to follow him over the edge. Alex couldn't say how long they'd stayed in the shuttle, or how many times he lost himself in Michael. But when the fever finally left him, he'd calmly calmed Maria to make sure that their path was cleared. Thankfully, she did not ask any questions because Alex was not prepared to give any answers. Carefully, he divested Michael, who was mostly asleep and drifting in a blissful haze, of the remains of any of his practically shredded clothing, and then wrapped him up in a thermal blanket from the shuttle's crash kit and carried him carefully back to Michael's quarters. Honestly, it meant to leave him there, let him rest, and give him space to process what had just transpired between the two of them. Truth be told, Alex probably needed to process what had happened, but he was distracted by the change to the room. Michael had been busy, it seemed. He'd practically transformed the room from dirty and cluttered to clean, neat, and somehow open. The mechanics weren't gone, but they were corralled neatly onto a new workbench that took up a good part of one of the walls. The grease-stained couch had been thoroughly cleaned, and a few plush pillows and soft blankets added. The lighting, always just a little too harsh in the crew quarters, had been dimmed and softened somehow. And the furniture had been shifted around so that there was more room for a couple of stools, arranged on either side of an instrument rack, one that held two guitars. Alex let out a slow breath, looking down at Garen, all angelic curls and sun-kissed warm skin. And instead of leaving him alone, Alex saddled him carefully onto the just slightly too narrow bed, stripping down, just himself, Michael's uniform having not survived the incident, and curled up around him. Michael had acquired some soft pillows here, too. These were definitely not standard issue. Alex recognized some of the handiwork of different species around the ship. Traded for, not replicated, he realized. Alex pulled Michael against him, left a soft kiss against the scar on his shoulder blade, and smoothed his hand up and down Michael's flank. Even after the mind meld, there had been lingering doubts. The haze of the black tau stirred together their emotions, and it was hard to parse out which were his emotions and which were Michael's. Punfar had made an already complicated situation worse, or better. It was hard to tell. Logically speaking, he should just accept what Michael had said before things had escalated. But had things not already been escalated by that point anyway, with Alex pinning him to the wall, all but rutting against him? Alex felt a sudden rush of embarrassment and guilt at his lack of self-control. He tried to breathe through it. He needed to maintain his self-control, think, not get swept away by feelings. He'd quite enough of that already. Michael stirred with a soft, pleased hum. He took Alex's hand, pulling it up to his lips, and Alex moaned softly at the soft, intimate gesture, pressing more kisses to his shoulder. "Hey, you," Michael said softly, voice a little rough and a lot sexy. He shifted, rolling to face Alex, wincing a little, and Alex hissed, immediately worried. "Are you hurt?" Alex had not really checked Michael thoroughly for any damage he might have caused him, a little more concerned with going somewhere where they were less exposed. But he had noticed some bruising, and especially a bite mark on his shoulder, already starting to bruise. And it must have been the lingering effects of the ponfar, because the sight of it had been incredibly, irrationally pleasing. Sore, Michael said, ending up practically nose-to-nose with Alex. A slow, wicked grin spread across his handsome face. Pleasantly sore, and happy to see you. Michael kissed his palm again, causing Alex to shiver.
That, Alex began, trailing off.
Michael looked curious, dragging his lips against Alex's skin, causing his toes to curl.
Feels good?
Alex nodded, gently tugging his hands free to trace his index and middle finger up over Michael's, who watched curiously. When Michael spoke, his voice and eyes were soft.
You know, this confused the hell out of me. I thought maybe you didn't like me. But I'm guessing that's not it. Definitely not. He almost didn't say anything else. It was hard for him, talking about his people's rituals. Even harder to talk about his own feelings. It can mean a lot of things, Alex began slowly, stopping the light caress to rest his index and middle fingers against Michael's, who imitated the position of his hand, still curious. Alex could feel it too, through the lingering connection of the melt. No concern, just warm affection and curiosity. It gave him the strength to continue with this incredibly embarrassing conversation. It's how we show affection.
So, like a kiss? Michael asked, grinning, and rubbed his fingers gently over Alex's.
No, he chuckled, pressing their hands together, palm to palm, middle and ring fingers spreading slowly apart. Like an embrace, but the meaning can change depending on the situation. Was it an embrace when you did it the other day?
Michael kept his tone casual, but Alex could sense the anticipation, the hope. Alex, however, flushed at the question, causing Michael to shift a little closer, their nose touching briefly. He laughed, soft and sweet, not an ounce of mocking in it. A little late to be feeling shy, don't you think?
Alex couldn't deny that. He took a breath. No, that night, it was more like foreplay.
Michael's eyebrows climbed into his hairline, and Alex could feel the light echoes of shock, amusement, and warmth. And in turn, Alex let his shoulders relax, let himself be safe here, pressed close together, their fingers threading, now holding hands in the human way.
Maybe I really do need to read a book on Vulcans, Michael added, tucking their joined hands between them. Our practices and traditions are kept private, especially rituals pertaining to romance, Alex explained. It would probably be easier to speak in clinical, textbook terms, but that wasn't what Alex wanted. There was nothing clinical or textbook about how I felt for Michael. That was obvious and would have been illogical to deny. You won't find them on book or tape.
I did check the Roswell's data tapes, Michael admitted.
You did? Alex asked, surprised.
Of course I did. Michael leaned in to nuzzle their noses together, a gentle, soft little gesture.
Are you kidding? I've been gone for you since day one. You must have known. I was purposefully unsubtle. You mean you were out of line?
Michael grinned, nudging him.
You'll like it.
He seemed all confidence, and if it weren't for the connection, he would not have noticed the thread of doubt. Alex kept a straight face for one heartbeat, two, but he couldn't stand the softly mounting worry.
I admit, I do.
Michael's smile regained some of its brilliance, and Alex shook his head. He wanted Michael to smile like that all the time. They lapsed into silence for a few minutes, Michael's fingertips tracing little patterns, nonsensical, on his skin. By the way, he started after a while, where the hell were you going in that damn shuttle anyway?
Doesn't matter,
Alex said, hoping quite hard that Michael would drop it. But Michael was frowning at him. Unfortunately, their connection did flow both ways. Alex, Michael prodded, tell me. Alex sighed, rolling onto his back. I was entering the Pluck Tau, the blood fever. And that means, Michael asked, shifting to sit up, the blanket slipping down, revealing bruises around his hips. Alex frowned, reaching to touch some of them, thinking of chiding Michael for letting him hurt him. But how could he, when his touch was still so possessive, when the sight of marks on Michael's skin still thrilled some deep instinctive part of him? The part of him that logic was supposed to rein in. Michael gripped Alex's bicep, regaining his attention. He was frowning down at him, and Alex once more was reminded that their connection flowed both ways. Alex wasn't sure how to feel about it, being so bare and exposed to someone for the first time in his life. One instinct told him to recoil, and the other told him to cling on for dear life. Seriously, Alex, Michael said. What does that mean? Were you just going to get off in the shuttle and come back to work or something? Are shuttles part of Vulcan mating rituals? Don't be ridiculous, Alex replied, and Michael, a little exasperatedly, motioned for him to continue. But Alex just touched the finger-shaped bruises on Michael's right hip. I hurt you. Because I let you, Michael replied, dismissively, and shook his arm a little. Don't be withholding. Seriously, Alex, I'm assuming this is going to happen again, and I want to be there for you, give you what you need. But I can't do that if you keep me in the dark. Alex didn't look at him. Instead, he looked at the guitar stands he could see through the doorway of Michael's bedroom. Maria called it nesting, but Alex was starting to think it was more about providing. And perhaps Alex didn't mind the idea of being provided for by Michael. Essentially, Alex said, defeated, Black Tau is a state characterized by aggression and instinct. He gently traced the bruises on Michael's hip, guiltily. Or maybe he simply felt like he should feel guilty, though Michael didn't seem to pay it any mind. In fact, there was a soft thrill through their connection that Alex wanted to parse out, understand. Did Michael like it just as much as that deep instinctive part of him? To be crass, if we can't fuck, we have to fight. Oh, you were taking yourself out of the situation, Michael guessed. So you wouldn't hurt anyone? Alex nodded, slowly, still touching the bruises. Michael didn't say that Alex could have come to him, but he didn't need to. That reality set between them. How long does it last? Michael asked, still frowning, like something didn't make sense to him. How long were you planning on floating around in space before you came back? If neither instinct is satisfied, Alex trailed off, not wanting to admit that the state left unresolved would most likely be lethal. But Michael must have picked it up through their bond, because he made a soft, upset noise. Alex, he said, staring at him for a moment. And whatever he saw must not have satisfied him, because he grabbed one of those fancy pillows and smacked Alex, dead in the face. What? Alex sputtered. Of all the stupid... Michael started, anger and hurt and exasperation vibrating between them. You're saying you would have rather died than have sex with me? Michael was still holding the pillow tightly in his grip, and Alex didn't trust him to not hit him with it again. Sitting up, he pulled it out of Michael's hand, set it aside. Alex snorted, of all the ridiculous. Don't be so dramatic. I did not want to force it on you, Alex replied. Michael didn't understand how fucking awful the lack of control felt. I'm the one being dramatic? You nearly just died from horniness, and I'm the dramatic one? You're an idiot, Michael replied, and he was eyeing the pillow again. Complete and utter fool. You could have just asked. Alex rubbed his temple. It's not as simple as you think. Michael rolled his eyes. No, I think it is. Hey,
so I'm going to literally die if I don't have sex. And I know you've been trying to get in my pants for the last 2 months, so want to give me a hand? Michael actually jerked his fist up and down for emphasis. There. Easy. Alex briefly contemplated hitting Michael with a pillow. Ah, Michael continued, before Alex could formulate a proper response. You don't get it, do you? You're sitting there fussing about what's proper, and being self-sacrificingly noble for no fucking reason. Do you understand that all I care about is that you're alive and safe? And it terrifies me that had I not gone down to get parts from a shuttle, you'd be fucking dead? Michael. Alex reached for him, wanting to reassure him. Michael clearly wasn't ready to be comforted, though. No, I don't want to hear any more BS about my complicated feelings or complicated, obtuse Vulcan culture, Michael continued, grabbing Alex's hands tightly. My feelings for you are not complicated. I really like you, Alex. Dumb, constipated feelings and all. And I'm hoping you like me, too. Alex huffed out a soft breath. Alex was sure Michael knew the answer to that, could likely feel how much Alex cared for him, just like Alex could feel how much Michael cared for him. But Alex could also sense the vulnerability, the soft worry under it. That was what needed addressing. He reached up to cup his cheek gently. I do. Michael leaned into it, but his eyes were intent on Alex's for several heartbeats. And Alex could tell that he was feeling him out, the psychic bond taking on a different flavor. And Alex realized after a moment that it was Michael's own special brand of telepathy. That's what matters, Alex heard, no, felt the idea in his head. Wrapped up in worry and hope, and something so soft and vulnerable and tender that it left him breathless. Yes, it is, he agreed. Thinking it as hard as he could. Come here, Tala. Softly, tugging Michael back into himself, allowing his emotions to carry the weight of the word, the weight of his feelings. Michael let out a deep breath, his emotions heavy with relief and warmth, as he let Alex draw him back into his arms, tucked his head right into Alex's shoulder, his curls playing over his skin. Please tell me we don't have to wait 7 years to fuck again, Michael asked, breaking the quiet of the moment, tilting his head up to look at Alex. The corners of his lips curled up slightly, eyes sparkling, teasing. Alex rolled his eyes. Idiot. But he was grinning too, catching Michael's chin between his fingers and kissing him deeply, answering mentally with a gentle pulse of desire, one knot shot through with the urgency of Punfar. Michael melted into him, all soft warmth. Now that the plaque towel had faded, he could truly appreciate how much warmer Michael was than he'd expected. How good he smelled. How much being wrapped in his arms felt like summer rain in the hot Vulcan desert. Somehow electric and peaceful all at once. It was a soft, precious moment. Fragile, but all the more important for that. Soon enough, Alex knew they'd have to climb out of bed and get back to work. There were 1,000 problems to deal with, not least of which was their dwindling life support. He would have to be captain. Michael would have to be a brilliant engineer, pulling solutions to their problems out of thin air. But for right now, just for right now, he could just be Alex. And Michael could just be his. The end.